Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. Next, we're going to offer you another Keystone conversation. We've been featuring voices regarding the Keystone XL pipeline. So far, we've spoken with Attorney General Marty Jackley and USD Law Professor Mayanna Dellinger. Today, we're bringing you an interview with TransCanada spokesperson Matthew John. So we're going to talk about the Keystone XL pipeline. And one of the first things I want to do is just define what that is. This is a project that has not yet been built. Am I correct?
This is correct, yes.
Tell me where it's at right now and give me a brief history of Keystone XL.
So Keystone XL is an 1,180-mile proposed crude oil pipeline that would deliver North American crude oil from Alberta and from points in North Dakota and Montana to refineries in the Midwest and Gulf Coast.
And it's how long of a preparation has been going into it, and where does it stand as far as getting developed?
Well, after a seven-year review process in November, President Obama denied the required presidential permit for the Keystone XL pipeline. Shortly afterwards, in January, TransCanada challenged that denial by announcing that it was taking legal action under the North American Free Trade Agreement and also initiated a constitutional litigation against the U.S. administration.
So what happens next? I know South Dakota has joined the litigation as a friend of the court. It just goes through a legal process at this point, or is there some deal-making going on?
I believe it's before the courts, and you can appreciate that I'm unable to speak to those particulars.
Sure. So when we talk about Keystone XL in South Dakota, one of the first things we think of locally is job creation, and that's one of the things people talk about being a benefit. Can you give me an idea of, if this project goes forward, how many jobs are created and what the nature of those jobs is?
Sure. Well, in South Dakota, we're talking about 3,500 jobs, direct and indirect, about $114 million in wages paid in the state. Property tax revenues collected by the state would increase by approximately 10%, and South Dakotans would see approximately $191 million boost in GDP. So the economic impacts are quite significant for the state and for the United States as well.
What kind of jobs are we talking about?
Well, we've executed project labor agreements with major national labor unions, and these jobs will go to they're largely associated with construction of the pipeline. There'll be construction work and skilled labor, such as welders, pipe fitters, heavy machine operators. That type of work.
How long does it take something like that to get built? I mean, how long would those jobs exist in the state?
Well, the pipeline is built in spread, so the entire pipeline would take approximately 2 years to construct.
Now, you and I talked earlier on the phone, and the notion of a temporary job came up, and I'm wondering if you'll talk about that again. These are temporary jobs, some people say, and that's one of the criticisms, but you disagree with that. Tell me why.
Sure, yeah. And I'm glad you asked me about that, because we'd like to dispel some of the negative connotation around the idea of temporary jobs, because, you know, I don't know many temporary welders or temporary pipe fitters. The men and women who choose the building trades as their career do so because they're passionate about their work and they're good at it. And they're trying to do largely the same things as you and I, which is putting foods on their plate, putting their kids through school, and saving for their retirement. So the very suggestion that building trades or jobs that have a completion date are less important to the American economy is a bit misguided.
You mentioned property tax rate, and I guess I'm going to admit that I don't really understand how that works. So how does property tax fit into this project?
Well, so the way the pipeline is taxed is based on an assessed value, sort of like similar to a home. So when the state assesses the infrastructure, we pay tax on that. I believe the counties collect that tax, or it goes directly to the state and then dispersed through each county. And I can give you the breakdown, mm-hmm. If you want afterwards, of the property tax increases and all the stats relevant to South Dakota.
Yes, I would like that, and then we can put some links or gather some information and put them online for listeners
sure.
as well.
Sure, and all of the stats I'm providing you are from the United States State Department's Environmental Impact Statement.
Yeah, what did that impact statement say? I know it is large, it's multi-layered, but give me some of the highlights of what that research showed over the seven years, you said, right?
Sure. And the so what the State Department's Environmental Impact Statement found was that the project's environmental impact would be minimal. Five separate and independent environmental impact statements all concluded that that the project would have minimal impact on the environment and specifically climate change, which was also considered.
How does climate change figure into your business plan? It has to be something that you're talking about all the time, the future of business in the field that you're in.
Yeah, certainly. TransCanada has a climate change policy. You know, we invest in significantly in low carbon, low emissions technologies. We have over $5 billion in emissionless and renewable assets, from nuclear to hydro to solar and wind farms as well. And we also believe that that natural gas and oil will still play a large part of our energy mix for some decades to come, and that pipelines are the safest and most environmentally responsible way of transporting those.
So some people say that now is the time to go ahead and leave fossil fuels in the ground, and you disagree with that, but why?
Well, I mean, far be it from me to say that which way we should go in terms of climate action. I'm just one person. When we look at the growth in energy demand and the need for reliable, stable energy, we can support that through natural gas. We can support that through oil here at home, and we can also support that through growing renewables and growing nuclear as well.
What's the balance there? Does it start to shift at some point as you go forward? It's less fossil fuels and more renewables, or does it stay at a certain ratio?
Well, again, I'm not the expert here. You would probably want to speak to someone at the United States Environmental Information Agency or the International Energy Agency. Those are two of the largest statistic providers for energy needs in the future, and both of those. Both of those agencies do foresee a significant increase in renewables, but also a significant use of both fossil fuels.
Hmm. What's the biggest environmental risk, if you can use that word, for South Dakotans and in our environment, our farmland, our soil, our landscape?
So for Keystone XL, I'll say that in addition to going through the most rigorous an exhaustive environmental review for a cross-border pipeline project in history, TransCanada voluntarily agreed to 57 additional safety conditions, which would make Keystone XL one of the safest and most stringently regulated pipelines in the United States. So some of these safety features include high-carbon steel. The steel is coated with corrosion-resistant coatings. We place automatic shutoff valves at closer intervals, so spaced closer apart and on either side of water crossings. So I think it's important to know that we do take safety seriously and we do respect the land in which we operate on.
Where does that research come from? Is that something TransCanada does to sort of invest in that research of making a pipeline safer? Or do you partner with other? I'm just curious about the technology.
Well, technology and research and development is a significant part of our business. We invest a lot of money in research and R&D in every year. And our goal as a company is to have zero incidents. Mm-hmm. Our goal is to operate a safe and reliable network of energy infrastructure.
How much does an incident like the leak near Freeman, South Dakota affect you? What do you guys have to go through when there's sort of a problem?
Well, it's all hands on deck, really. So when we have an incident like we had in Freeman, it's obviously going to recognize, we obviously recognize that an incident like this causes people to ask questions. We welcome those questions because it gives us a chance to provide people with the facts about the project and the facts about the incident. I think we've been quite forthcoming with the information, and we're willing to work closely with yourselves in the media as well as the South Dakota Department of Environment and Natural Resources.
Talk to me a little bit about that notion of transparency, because obviously, you know, the public sort of demands a complete transparency. Are there advantages and disadvantages, and what are some of the challenges of transparency in your line of work?
Right, and a lot of the times, we don't have the answers, and for us, we can't speculate
right.
as to causes. We can't speculate as to when things will be done. We just don't have that the information,
right.
and it's not verified. You know, when you work in a company with a bunch of engineers and people focused on. Both all of the inputs and all of the information, and then we make decisions based on the best information available.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough because we understand that people want information right away. They want the answers right now, and that's unfortunately, and sometimes we can't do that because it just wouldn't be appropriate.
So what kind of, and we're switching gears a little bit because now we're not talking about Keystone XL and we talk about Freeman, but there was a leak, and where are we at with that? What do you know now that you didn't know in those early days?
Well, the permanent repair work at the Freeman site has been completed. We've sent the section of pipe to an independent third-party facility where the weld and the pipe will be analyzed. This type of analysis takes quite some time, and before we know what caused anything, what the causes were, that information will need to be discovered by the third party agency, and all of this information will be provided to PHMSA as they are overseeing the investigation.
And so the first thing to do is to respond to the leak and stop it. I want to get at some of your safety and emergency measures. So you find out there's a leak. In this case, it was discovered by the landowner. You respond and then repair, and then. What is the process? What is the step to sort of address an emergency?
Right. So we have we rely on a multi-leveled leak detection, leak management system, and it's not just relying on the one computer, the one computer system. And I think it's important for folks to know that TransCanada employs a full suite of overlapping leak detection tools. And this includes the 24/7 satellite monitoring. We do regular aerial flyovers of the pipeline route. We do visual inspections. That means folks are walking the line. We do inline inspections with sensitive tools that look at the inside of the pipe, and we also do training and education with first responders and landowners in the various regions that we operate, so they know when to report, and if they see something that they aren't sure of, to call us.
So the landowners are actually part of that monitoring system?
Absolutely.
So a landowner finding a leak isn't necessarily out of the realm of how things maybe are supposed to work. That's part of the overall process.
Yes, and you don't. It's not responsible to rely on simply one tool because it takes a lot of tools to do this and to do it responsibly. And we take that very seriously.
Has anything that you found at this point near Freeman given you pause for any other spots on the pipeline?
No. The pipeline wouldn't be operating today if it wasn't safe. We were provided clearance from PHMSA to restart the line, and so there's no concerns there. The repair work is sort of quick.
Yeah.
It's about 24 hours to cut out the piece and repair it. However, the reclamation work will be ongoing for some time because we owe it to the landowner to make it right and to restore that land.
What's the goal of reclamation, though?
The goal is to bring it back to a productive state.
Sure, sure.
I think
that's it. What's a reasonable amount of time to check back from the media or from the public? What's a reasonable expectation to say, it's about now that we should be hearing, you know, maybe not an update, but some sort of information that says something is still being worked on? Now, I'm talking in terms of the leak near Freeman, with people still wanting to follow up and say, when are we going to know exactly what happened? What's a reasonable amount of time to wait and to just check back and say, hey, it's been a couple weeks, it's been a couple months. Do you have an update?
Yeah, well, and in my experience, I believe, now we're not in charge of the investigation. So
okay.
we cut the, so what happens is we take the affected section of pipe and we send it to a third-party facility where they will do metallurgy analysis. They'll do all sorts of testing, chemical testing, and all sorts of other stuff to figure out what's going on with that section of pipe. And then they will put out a report. So I don't work for them, so they don't have their timetable.
You're wondering the same thing we're wondering.
Yeah, and we will, and we take these things that we learn from them as well.
Right.
These are, you know, it's nobody wants to have an incident. We never want that. But you know, these are incidents that you learn from, and you apply those learnings to your existing facilities and your facilities in the future.
Right. I want to say thank you as well so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it as well.